I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration, collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next interview is with a returning guest, and it's always a real pleasure to be able to do that. You know, I'm the producer of this podcast, Face to Face, and this was live with Yung Chang, a returning guest from about two Toronto International Film Festivals ago. I had the pleasure of interviewing him and Robert Fisk about This Is Not a Movie, a great film. You've got to see that for so many reasons. But also, Yung and I... There was just so much to chat about. There always is. And I always feel, you know, you've heard me say it before, but I feel as if we barely scratch the surface on these conversations. Check this out. The film is Wuhan, Wuhan. Wonder what it's about. Here's the quote. Quote, "We are from different lands and are separated by mountains and water. Yet above us, we share the same sky and the same feelings," close quote, written in the 7th century. And you're going to have to watch the film and listen to the interview to know why that helps to provide some context for this story in this film. 30 filmmakers were caught in the lockdown. They were there to film another documentary about the Yangtze River, something Yung knows quite a bit about, actually. And if you haven't seen that film, Up the Yangtze, you really need to. And they were able to capture what was going on in Wuhan very recently. And now Yung and a few others have brought this to us so that we can step into the shoes of others in a very specific, meaningful way. This is a beautiful, hopeful, cathartic, and deeply memorable piece. It's a story that, you know, you're going to want to step into, and you're going to want to see it with others too. I think it almost demands a community like response. It's again a beautiful, memorable piece. And Yung and I we chat about why it was important for him not to politicize this, why this was a universal story. We talk about similarity through difference. We talk about the poetry of the city and its history, and why that's important to not only this film, but also to it's important for the world to know that, and to see the response of just, you know, everyday people who are making contact with reality in many different meaningful ways. And so you're going to enjoy this film. You really are. Like I said, it's a beautiful piece. Have I said that before already? Can you tell that I liked it? So, and I hope you enjoyed the interview as well. And I had so much fun with Yung, and we barely scratched the surface on these conversations. And so I think he's bringing together about 300 hours of footage. Can you imagine from 30 different people and tying up those loose ends with some cinematic, cathartic thread that people are going to, I believe, revisit for years to come. So step right in. Look for the film. You can check it out online. At least you can find out more about the doc and about Yung and who was involved, the Wuhan, wuhandoc.com. And it's at festivals. It's been at festivals. We did this interview during Hot Docs, and there's many more coming up for this film, and they're on the site. So definitely check that out as well. And don't forget, if you're looking for more information about the work I'm doing, davidpecklive.com, you can find out more about my writing and my speaking, and of course, the podcasting there. And if you landed on that this interview through iTunes or Acast or Spotify or whoever it is, please do check out the site, davidpecklive.com. Sign up for the newsletter. If you want to advertise on the podcast, let us know. We'd love to set something up for you that's meaningful for you as well. And also, can I ask you to leave a review? If you are enjoying what we're doing here, we would so appreciate that. Leave a review for us on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you choose to listen to podcasts. It all helps as we continue to tell this story and as we continue to tell other people's stories as well. So stay tuned. The film is Wuhan Wuhan. The interview is with Yong Chang. And, don't touch that dial. Coming right up. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a special guest here, a very special guest, as usual on Face to Face. We have Yong Chang with us here today, and a returning guest, at least once before on the show. Yong, thank you for joining me today on Face to Face. Real pleasure to have you and see you again online.
Thanks so much for having me, David. Appreciate it.
It's a shame that we can't be in the same room together and hanging out. I think it was a couple of years ago at TIFF, we were just sort of reminiscing before we had hit the record button. Another brilliant movie that you made, This Is Not a Movie, with Robert Fisk. So what a pleasure that interview was, by the way. Got a lot of traction online, so thanks for that.
Oh, great. That's good to hear. And a sad loss, having
absolutely
his passing. And
he gave, do you know, Yong, he gave me his business card. And said, "Yeah, I don't do email. If you wanted to do a follow up, here's my. You'll have to ring me."
I love that. Yeah, he had a cell phone, so he would be able to pick up a call.
Yeah,
and he would. No matter where or who from whom. So
what a character, eh? What a character.
Yeah, what a force.
And quite a force is right.
The timing of his death was so sad. I think he was felled by having to be locked down, and he was a man who was in perpetual motion. So,
He lived in Ireland, didn't he?
He was mostly in Beirut.
Ireland
was only for the off season. He'd retreat in Beirut. The summers are just unbearable. Actually, so hot there. So
right.
For him, easier just to scoot off to Dublin, where he would be working on his book and.
Hanging out with you too, and so on.
Yeah, exactly. Bono.
He lived nearby, I understand.
Bono, Van Morrison, Enya had a castle down the street. He didn't live in a mansion. I mean, he's quite humble.
You got it.
But he just happened to be on the coast.
Okay, which is where Yong, you gotta love a community where you can say, "Yeah, my friend. Yeah, they just live in the castle down the street." Like, come on. Like, how cool is that?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, listen, it's, I mean, China certainly has that kind of history. Maybe not a lot of castles, but certainly a lot of buildings that go way back. And I mean, what a privilege to step into this film. Congratulations on the film, Wuhan, Wuhan, world premiere at Hot Docs. Get your tickets for it. It's going to be online April 29th to May the 9th, I believe. I hope I didn't get that wrong.
That's right. That's the window for the festival.
Yeah.
And I think if you buy a ticket, you have, and they're not expensive, you have like a 48-hour window to watch.
48-hour window. Yeah. And then I'm guessing, based on the content, and maybe you've already got some of this in place, I don't know if you can talk about it, but it's going to be available elsewhere down the road.
Yeah, we are rolling the film out festival-wise, a bunch of film festivals across Canada, North America, Europe. It's going places, and
cool.
And I'm That's excited great. For people to see this movie.
Yeah, it's a beautiful film, Yong. It really is.
Thanks so much.
It's a beautiful film. I mean, again, every festival, and I've been doing festivals now for about 8 or 9 years, there's always a theme, and there's just this year for sure, there's singular to universal. And there's this, for me, there's this theme of, I don't know, this simplicity of the average and the everyday that's anything but.
Right.
And I think your film just so beautifully portrays that in a way that I don't know if it was unexpected for me, but it just sort of unfolded.
That's really reassuring to hear. I think, you know, people, I've heard that comment, unexpected. And I appreciate that comment because I think people go entering a film about Wuhan have certain, may have certain ideas of what it could be about.
Of course.
I think for me, it was kind of looking around that a little bit. I didn't want to politicize it. I didn't want to, and knowing that there's going to be there is already a certain genre of the pandemic film now, you know, and so how to see through a story that may fit, you know, with the other films. I've even made a short film about the American pandemic called Pandemic 19 about frontline U.S. doctors who recorded their personal diaries for me and my co-director. And that painted a portrait of a time, you know, at the peak of the lockdown last spring and summer. And Wuhan is another sort of, I think I look at it as a portrait of a city, looking at the painting, giving you a sense, hopefully giving audiences who are not familiar with Wuhan, the city, a steeped in history as you open with, you know, this is a city that is, you know, thousands of years old with a great culture, there's a steeped in a poetic history and, right. And people would be, I think people, and some people have been surprised to see that it's not a backwards wet market village. You know, this is a thriving, right, 11 million cosmopolitan city with a, for me, what I'm so interested in is, you know, with the city was the art culture and the music culture.
It's place,
you know, for contemporary music, punk music, that is the place to go. And
funny, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't think of an ancient city being rooted punk music having its roots in an ancient city. You wouldn't normally think of that, would you?
Exactly. And I think it has something to do with the university there and,
right,
and the student culture there. And it's a easy place. It feels comfortable there, you know, and there is a colonial aspect to the city. It was colonized because it was on the Yangtze River. It was an important stopping, you know, a place of transportation and transport. And for me, you know, like just making the movie, I made sure to build in that we had the composers were from Wuhan, actually a band called Hua Lun, who were one of the early punk bands.
It's in so great. Wuhan.
I love the soundtrack.
Oh, the soundtrack's amazing.
You know, the calligraphy you see with the opening title was done by a Wuhanese calligrapher. You know, I wanted to humanize the city that had become a faceless statistic. And I wanted to go beyond that.
Well, and frankly, I mean, and the timing of this is just so, I've been using the word prescient a lot lately. But with just the racism that we're seeing kind of everywhere, yeah, in its, yeah, different forms and its different manifestations,
yeah,
and you know, in the trial recently, and yeah, so like it's just George, it's Floyd's trial, and it's bang on.
I'm glad you bring that up because you know.
Did you feel that going into the film as well? Like, was that part of your hope and desire?
You know. Exactly that. And what happened a week before getting the call to make the film, my daughter and I were in our lovely neighborhood in West Toronto here. And we had an anti-Chinese racist incident and it was directed towards my daughter and myself and mostly towards my daughter. And it was, by an older, unfortunately, older white male gentleman. And it was horrible and it still
so
lingered with me.
It
was upsetting. And that's, you know, you nailed it because I carried that forward into the making of this film. I wasn't on location filming, you know, this was footage that I inherited by the team of filmmakers in Wuhan who entrusted me to see this film through and to make it into a feature documentary. And And what drove me at that moment, last April 2020, was this incident. And then, you know, it was also just so fever pitch at that time with, you know, the ex-president, whose name I can't say, who, you know, who was...
Do you need to say what it rhymes with, at least?
Yeah, dump. He was, you know, the China flu thing and the Kung flu thing. I mean, my team, and I worked remotely. I worked with a team of editors in Los Angeles who were Chinese, of Chinese heritage. And we really, really felt with the material we had at hand, 300 hours of footage and 9 different characters all across section across the city of Wuhan through the eyes of frontline and essential care workers. That was what I saw through it. The footage, what spoke to me was that humanistic side of the of the people. And who were similar to everyone else in the world, certainly more so in Wuhan, who were dealing with an unknown virus and trying to figure it out, you know, ad hoc. And it was, and that's what I, that's what spoke to me. And that was the through line of the movie, I think.
Zhang or Zen, maybe the chief ER doctor, who said he didn't feel desperate. But he still didn't. There was this sense of no hope, and I mean, that was talk about
exactly
a global sort of perspective, right?
That's right. The ER physician, Dr. Zheng, who says in the film, you know, that he talks a little, because you know the film picks up in February, which was just after the major kind of the craziness, the chaos in January in Wuhan and December in January, and things were just starting to die down a little bit, but still not necessarily in the clear. And Dr. Jung was talking about this idea of just kind of sticking through with it, and I appreciate, you know, having made a film about the American frontline doctors. It was a similar feeling, you know. I use the word, and it may be a little sentimental, but these were heroes, you know, who were trying to figure something out without much assistance, with a lot of botched, policies. It was these healthcare workers who were putting their lives at risk and figuring it out, and they still are, as we know. Speaking to you from Toronto, where we are now in a situation where it's worse than it was in the first wave, as we enter the third wave, and the lack of just when politics gets in the way of good, hard facts and science.
And where are those hard facts and science? You know what I mean? I'd love to hear what you have to say about how's history going to reflect on this time? You know, the not only the madness of it, how we either came together or how it divided us, but how we actually communicated and talked about it in a way that was meaningful. I've actually, right now, I'm kind of cocooning from the news. I just can't handle it anymore.
Right?
What do you believe?
I think for me, part of the process of making the film was just, as I mentioned earlier, just sort of taking aside those the statistics, the headlines, the information, and just focusing it on these emotional stories of real people, and to me that has been quite a journey, emotional journey, living with these characters and what they gave to us in the footage. But also,
you weren't actually on the ground for any of the footage shooting.
Exactly, I was not there. This was a team of 30 who were locked down in Wuhan, who were set to make a film about the Yangtze River. But then,
There's something you know a locked in. About, eh?
What's that?
That's something you know a little bit about.
Exactly, but and they were locked in, and so the crew and the director on location pivoted, and they focused their access onto stories about these different, frontline workers. And what really spoke to me in the material was, I think what you see in the five characters we follow, most especially the young couple.
they're hilarious, by the way.
Right. And you know, and we had that wonderful, naturally built in arc of the pregnancy. And,
sure.
And to me, it had to anchor the film, and I wanted it to lift off, you know, to climax into that moment of the birth of the child and leave us with that thought. I think it's hard to pinpoint in words what the intention was, because I think it's a feeling thing. And I think, people that have seen the movie have expressed how it is kind of cathartic.
Mm.
And that was the intention, I think, to kind of put into scope, And I hate to put it in words, because I think it reduces it. It oversimplifies, hope, maybe the emotional complexity of that moment, of everything built up to that moment.
Sure.
And I want to leave us, and I want to leave the audience with that feeling of you know, and I, you know, obviously I will put it into words, but it'll cheapen the experience maybe. But I think the idea was to just give the audience a sense of, you know, the universality in our emotional ups and downs, mm-hmm. dealing with the pandemic, and that at the end of the day, we still live. We still have to deal with the trivial things that we deal with, that,
right.
and also that we have to laugh and we have to cry and feel the gamut of
not being able to find the crib that your partner really hopes and desires. That, you know,
yeah, there's a, right, that and the scene where
that's a
where
great
the,
scene, by the way,
the partner says, why didn't you buy this earlier, as I told you, because now you've made it even harder because we're in a pandemic and you can't find the crib that we need for our child. And so it sets off this poor young husband on a journey to find a crib in a lockdown, the most severe lockdown.
Who clearly is rolling up his sleeves and stepping in, maybe because of boredom.
Guy.
Maybe because of boredom, but obviously because he truly wants to help.
He's such a kind-hearted, he's a good guy and a little, maybe, you know, I agree, maybe slightly misguided. You know, he should, you know, I do think he loves and cares about his wife, but he's also dealing with his own problems. And this was his way to feel some sort of sense of offering some sort of help to his community.
Being frozen, without being able to step in and help would have made me kind of crazy, I think. In that setting anyway. And so,
exactly.
No, hang on, I'm getting out of this apartment building. Yeah. I got to sweep the streets. I got to do something
exactly.
to help the bigger cause.
Right. And for me, it was, you know, personally, it was, you know, the opportunity to make the film was a feeling of having an outlet and a way of
right.
of expression. And we know many people don't have that opportunity. And I'm very grateful that I had a job, you know, during the pandemic. And it really, I think it saved my sanity. And I think I'm lucky as someone who's sort of a creative person, you know, creative maker, a filmmaker, you know, I could just find a way to cobble something together to like feel the need to make something, you know.
Don't need to get into the production or the pre-production too much, but was it easy to fund, or did you have to, or was it really challenging piecing the puzzle together?
So I'm very, very lucky. I was contacted by the studio behind the film, which is an American studio called Starlight Media. And they acquired the footage and looked for a director to help.
Oh, that's amazing.
And that was how I got that job. There weren't any problems at all. It was very supported. I said, you know, we had a pretty restrictive deadline of trying to complete a movie, a feature doc like this over the course of a few months. And so I asked for a very a robust team to help get it done, and they cool. provided that. So I had wow. excellent editors based in Los Angeles and a team of assistant editors. It was just a lot of, you know, the kind of work that usually a film like this may take 6 to 8 months of
right.
you know, intense work in the room, in the editing room. And meanwhile, we had figured a way to do it remotely. Thankfully, this would not have been done without Zoom and technology that's available to us now, which really pushed it through. And
so Young, do you end up directing the editors? I mean, in a sense, right? It's not like you're working alongside of the cinematographer, because you got what you got. Right? Is that kind of, it's got to be a little.
So that you're hitting a point there, and for me, it was the first time that I felt like I was actually an editor, where usually I'm the director who's filmed everything on location. Sure. I know the ins and outs of the footage. I'm often too close to the footage. I have no distance from it. Right. And in this regard, I was in a different place. I could appreciate the footage and see through the footage, sometimes, you know, things that I would not be able to see through if I was the director on location. So it was a wonderful feeling to be free to interpret the footage as I saw fit. And
that's cool.
And in that way it was quite different, exhilarating. I did feel like an editor in some ways, but I'm not. And so it was wonderful to just be able to carve the story out of with my editors.
One of the first films I remember interviewing the director, and I can't remember his name right now, but Silvered Water is the name of the film, and it was about Aleppo. I don't know if you've seen it, but it is worth reaching out and trying to find a copy of it. All basically shot on, you know, androids and really horrible quality footage, actually. Yeah. And he was exiled in Paris because he was a bit of a dissident. And here he was editing the film and from time to time calling into some of these journalists to say, hey, could you try and go and shoot this and shoot that? And that was just kind of mind blowing to me that, you know, you were making this collaborative project and not even in the same room together, you know?
Exactly.
It's pretty wild. It's really, really a fascinating experience. Hey, can you talk a little bit about the quote that I found, I believe, on the website?
Yeah, about under, living under the same sky.
We are from different lands, quote, and are separated by mountains and water, yet above us we share the same sky and the same feelings, close quote, just to speak to that century-old kind of city, seventh century
Japanese official.
Beautiful. Love it.
Wrote a letter to a Chinese official. And that was has stuck as a, and that came up as a kind of a quote during the early days of the pandemic in China. And I immediately connected to it, because that is essentially the theme of our film. And not to be too sentimental, you know, but it really was, I think, an important way to shape our movie, to think of it like, and certainly as you brought up, you know, the amount of hatred and division at that time and all, currently, you know, was so upsetting. And I think, for my team to latch onto that quote, it really helped to put into scope what our intention was, to give a human dimension, to kind of take away from that faceless, monolithic, you know, association people often make with China. And for me, there's a, you know, 1.3 plus billion people in mainland China, and each person is an individual.
Absolutely.
And I think you see it happening in the film with, for example, the mother and son stuck in the temporary hospital shelter.
For sure.
You know, she'll do anything to save her son, and she'll do anything to get out of the Byzantine healthcare system. And you know, and I think that speaks to what I was trying to do in a way with the movie, that, you know, each person in the movie is a thinking, breathing, fully fleshed out person. And, you know, Soldiers of the PRC.
Well, it's pretty amazing that you were able to do that with what is it, 5 characters in a country of 1.3 billion. So nicely done. Seriously. I mean, when you think of the size of China, never mind landmass, and I've been to Tianjin, I've been to Beijing a few times. Yeah. I had the good fortune to travel part of that country. It's astounding.
Yeah.
I mean, you really don't think until you're on the ground sometimes. You can't really grasp it. And I think that's what's so beautiful about this kind of documentary, this kind of storytelling. It helps, hopefully, us to situate ourselves at least a little bit in the other person's shoes, at least a little bit. And
that's it. Exactly. And I think about going back to Robert Fisk, you know, what he says, to report on the side of those who suffer, to walk and, you know, to go to, you know, he often says, you need to be on the ground somewhere.
You got to be on the ground.
To build empathy. I mean, I think essentially 100%. It's about empathy, and empathy is everything. And would probably, in a cheesy way, it does help to, you probably have a lot less racism.
Building empathy.
Just knew what other people were going through.
I don't know what I was reading recently. We're not teaching our children in schools. Our pedagogy isn't rooted in compassion and empathy. It's rooted in numbers and data.
Right.
Now, and that's my paraphrase, a Peckian paraphrase, but still, how do you teach that? You do it through storytelling, it seems to me. You do it through community and sharing. I got to say, I love the scene in the film. One of my favorite moments was, I think it was the psychologist in the full suit dancing. Yeah. I mean, come on. How does that not kind of level the playing field?
I love that moment. And I also just love the idea of a psychologist in China. I mean, that... For Chinese culture, you know, it's a little bit taboo to think
that
people need therapy and psychology help them. And it's sort of not really embraced. And to see that happening was very heartwarming, actually. I thought it was really interesting in a way. And also, you know, the simple techniques that the psychologist, implements.
Little cognitive therapy, I think, right?
Yeah, exactly. And in some ways, it can be considered as quite simplistic, maybe. But actually, you see how effective it is.
Some of those simple tools are the best ones. It seems
exactly.
To me.
And to see the printout of the photos on the hazmats, simple solution to a major problem, where patients can't see the faces of the doctors who are trying to save their lives. It becomes very disorienting for
many people. Yeah. Kind of dystopic in a way,
exactly. You know,
kind of takes us to some of those opening shots of the bridge and the river itself. Hey, well, listen, I hate to say it, but we've got to wrap up here in a couple minutes. Can you, I don't know if you want to talk about how you end the film, but it's really beautiful with the name of Yin's daughter.
Yeah. The film ends with a couple, you know, statements, one of them being the number of babies born in Wuhan during
16,638, folks.
There you go. And, you know, we kind of leave it at that. And that the couple named their child after the province of where Wuhan is in Hubei. So they named the child Peaceful Hubei. And,
How do you pronounce her name, Jung? How do you pronounce her name? Chuning?
Chuning, yeah, exactly. Chuning. And so I thought that would be the right moment, the right note to leave on. I mean, we're trying to offer a little hopefulness, you know.
Absolutely.
And a little bit of optimism. China certainly has, they dealt with the hardships in the beginning. There was some confusion in the beginning. There was some mishaps in the beginning of the pandemic. And then, because of the government they really locked down on it, and now they are better for it in a way. And I have a brother who lives in Beijing, and he has a family, and they are living life.
They're back to normal,
as if it was nothing. That there was, as if it was pre-pandemic.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I just thought
it's fascinating. The title card at the end of the film, as of April 25th, things have really simmered down. I mean, we're certainly not hearing about China in the news. I guess if we dug a little bit, we could find out more about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, obviously there are people, have a lot of questions about China,
of course,
and the truth in China. But I think, you know, I have many peers and colleagues in China, and they are, and my family, and they're literally, they're doing really well.
Yeah.
And, whereas here in Toronto, you know, I just got my shot, my vaccine, and
good for you.
Lockdown here, and just seeing our sad premier on the,
it's a bit of a troubling state of affairs. I got my shot just a few days ago. A little shout out for that. It was, she was genius. I didn't feel it at all, but until about 24 hours later. And then of course it felt like somebody had punched me in the shoulder.
I still have a headache. I still have got, I'm a little lightheaded. I have a friend who was really in it for the first 24 hours. In fact, fighting it out. And I hear that's a good sign, you know, everyone's bodies are different, but they're reacting to the foreign, you know, virus in their body. And that's how they build the pathogens to fight against it. And that, so I'm so happy that I got vaccinated.
Well, talk about access, right? And opportunity. And it's just such a privilege and a blessing to be able to go to the corner store and get that. And for the most part, to know that it's pretty safe. And hey, Young, you know what? As usual, I knew this was going to happen. Maybe we need to have a part two. But,
be happy to.
Man, what a pleasure chatting with you today. And Young Chang talking about his new film, Wuhan, Wuhan. Love the film. Is singular to the universal. I mean, similarity through difference. I mean, there's so many things going on in this film. Young, thanks for your time today. You're on Face to Face. Been a real pleasure seeing you again. And thanks again for the film.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good speaking to you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.